This program is brought to you by Resonance 104.4 FM. If you like what you hear and want to support our work, please make a donation at fundraiser.resonance.fm.
Okay.
Hang on.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you're listening to this is a recording on the 15th of April, 2020, during the lockdown, and I'm phoning Bob Parks at his home somewhere in the New Forest. So you're listening to Wavelength on Resonance 104.4 FM, and we're waiting for Bob to set up his record player in the other room somewhere.
Okay. I'll take my watch. Oh, no, I can check on that wrist.
All right. Can you hear me all right? Yeah. Can you hear me?
I can hear you, yeah.
Okay, good. So tell us who you are.
Recording or?
Yeah, we're recording now. So just.
All right. Okay. Hi. Okay. I'm Bob, and this is a selection. And here we go. I'm starting off with. I'm doing a whole bunch of poems. Is that all right?
Yeah, but
here we go.
Hang on. No, hold it. Whoa. Hold it. Tell us where you are, Bob. And are you locked down and so on?
All right. Yeah, I'm 73 nearly. I'm in Sway in the New Forest.
Yeah.
And I'm self-isolating. I'm a category 2.
Oh.
So I'm just depending on a few people I know to get food in.
Yeah.
Fingers crossed. And I love it. I think it's fantastic. It's like the gods are shining on me because I'm both a pacifist, so I haven't been, you know, principle touching people for the whole of my life. And then my Stalinism makes it, I've had a regime, romantic silence go inside me. So I'm perfectly equipped for this. This is like a piece of liberation, actually.
Yeah.
And it's a wonderful opportunity, I think.
Oh, good. So
I'm really blessed.
Are you literally staying indoors, or do you go out at all?
No, I go out once. Like they say, you can take a walk. I do a 5-mile jog every morning, about six ten, something like that.
Yeah.
And then it takes about an hour and a quarter, hour and a half.
Okay. And what are your neighbours all right? Do you have close neighbours or?
Not too close, you know, typical English. You never see them occasionally.
Right.
Yeah, I talk a little bit. And the lady next door, I've talked to her. I regularly say a word every 2 or 3 years to her. The next door, they're more, you know, teeth. And I got a bit over friendly at one time, actually. So they backed off a little bit there. They were most offended when I went down to London for the Trump demonstration.
Oh, yeah.
She thought that was a shocking thing to do.
Okay.
But well, he's all right with it. But, all right. You know, I get him helping me with the art and stuff like that, so it's not too bad.
Right. So are you in touch with people? You touch with your brother in Australia or anything?
Yeah. He's Drumana, which is south of Brisbane. He's got a lady friend there, and she just showed him, because he's a year older than him, a photograph of her as a little girl at the Queen's Coronation in 1953. Yeah, I call him daily, every day, in the morning, because I get it free on Talk. Well, I have to make Talk then.
Yeah. Okay, well, you can go ahead then. What are you going to do?
I'm going to go ahead. I've got a very ambitious plan of poems to read. I'm going to start off with St. John of the Cross. And I don't know. Anyhow, let's go for it.
Okay.
Okay, here we go.
Okay.
Gosh. Are you there? Hello, Bob. I think he's disappeared. Bob, can you hear me?
I'm all set up for our next track. Oh, here we go, right.
Oh, no, hold it. Well, stay, hold it, hold it. Stay on the line, stay on the line.
Yeah.
How are you recording this? Are you sort of just moving the phone over to the record player?
No, I'm just playing it in the other room.
Right. It's a bit...
Can you hear it?
But what kind of phone have you got? Is it a hands-free... I mean, is it like cordless or something?
No, it's just a land...
Yeah, I see. Yeah, it's not a great success. It's a bit distant. I think we'll
right.
I think we'll just press on with the poetry.
Okay, you can cut that bit out, yeah?
Yeah. It'll be all right.
Okay.
It's a bit quiet.
All right. I can put it on a little loud if you like, and then we'll hold it up to.
We'll see. Just if it, let's carry on with the.
Okay, here we go.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. It's a bit from Pinton Abbey.
Okay.
Wordsworth. And this is why I'm introducing this. I'm going to try and do a blast through Western poetry. And this is T.S. Fraser. This was his... He invited me onto his seminar group in modern English and American literature. And this was the course. I'm taking basically his course and a whole bunch of his favourite things.
Yeah.
So it's a little extract from Tintern Abbey. And now with gleams of half-extinguished thought, with many recognitions dim and faint, and somewhat of sad perplexity, the picture of my mind revives again. While here I stand, not only with the sense of present pleasure, but with pleasing thoughts for that in this moment there is life and food for future years. So I dare to hope, though changed, no doubt, from what I was at first when I came among these hills, when like a roe I bounded over the mountains, by the sides of the deep rivers and the lonely streams, wherever nature led, more like a man flying from something that he dreads than one who sought the thing he loved. For nature, then, the coursed pleasure of my boyish days and their glad animal movements all gone by, to me was all in all. I cannot paint what then I was. The sounding cataract haunted me like a passion. The tall rock, the mountain, and the deep, the gloomy wood, their colours and their forms were then to me an appetite, a feeling and a love that had no need of a remoter charm, but thoughts could find nor any interest unborrowed from the eye. The time is past, and all its aching joys are now no more in its dizzy raptures. For this, I faint eye, nor more nor murmur. Other gifts have followed. For such loss I would believe abundant recompense. For I have learned to look on nature, not in the hour of thoughtless youth, but hearing oftentimes the still and sad music of humanity. Not harsh, not grating, though the ample power to chasten and subdue. And I have felt a presence that disturbed me with the joy of elevated thoughts, a sense sublime of something far more deeply interfused, whose dwelling is the light of setting suns and the round ocean and the living air and the blue sky, and in the mind of man, a motion and a spirit that entails all thinking things, all objects and all thought, and rolls through all things. Therefore, I am still a lover of the meadows and the woods and the mountains, and of all that we behold from this green earth, of all the mighty world of ear and eye, both what they half create and what perceive, well pleased to recognize in nature and language of the sense, the anchor of my purest thoughts, the nurse, the guide, the guardian of my heart and soul, of all my mortal being. Right? George's favorite Yeats poem, and he loved Yeats, Sailing to Byzantium. That is no country for old men. The young in one another's arms, birds in the trees, those dying generation, at their song. The salmon falls, the mackerel crowded seas, fish, flesh or fowl, commend all summer long wherever it's begotten, born and dies, caught in that sensual music of all neglect, monuments of an aging intellect. An aging man is but a paltry thing, a tattered coat upon a stick, unless soul claps its hand and sing, and now to sing for every tatter in its mortal dress. Nor is there singing school but studying monuments of its own magnificence, and therefore I have sailed the seas and come to the holy city of Byzantium, old sages, standing in God's holy fire as in the gold mosaic of a wall. Come from the holy fire, turn in a gyre, and be the singing masters of my soul. Consume my heart away, sick with desire, and fasten to a dying animal, it knows not what it is, and gather me into the artifice of eternity. Once out of nature, I shall never take my bodily form from any natural thing, but such a form of Grecian goldsmiths make of hammered gold and gold enamelling, to keep a drowsy emperor awake, or set upon a golden bough to sing to lords and ladies of Byzantium of what is past, or passing, or to come. On to the next thing, which is another indirect link. It's a little bit of Rilke from his, the opening of the Duino, the closing of the middle bit of, I think, the first, whatever they are.
What, the Duino elegies, is it?
What are they called? The elegy.
Duino elegies.
I don't know. Here we go. I don't know why I put it in here, but here we go. Careful in gesture, did not the figures upon Attic stelae amaze you? Is not love, is not painting laid on the shoulders so lightly as to suggest they are utterly different from ours? Consider the hands they press lightly. For all the strength of the torso, those disciplined people knew this. We reach only so far. This much is ours. To touch once more like this, the gods bear upon us more fiercely. But that is a matter of the gods. Might not we find somewhere secret, some simple and decent and human, some strip of unfertile ground to lie between river and rock? For, as theirs did, our own heart exceeds us. We cannot trace it in pictures, which tame it, nor in godlike sculptures, which yet more control it. We're going to go on to Malevich's friend and buddy, Daniel Kalms. Mm-hmm. And I'm just going to read he wrote prose poems.
Right.
The Artist and the Clock. Serov, an artist, went to the canal. Why did he go there? To buy some India rubber. What did he want India rubber for? To make a rubber band.
Hmm.
And what did he want a rubber band for? In order to stretch it. That's what it's for. And what else? This is what else. The artist thereof had broken his clock. The look had been going well, but he picked it up and broke it. What else? Nothing else. Nothing. This is it. In a nutshell. Keep your filthy snout out when it's not needed. And may the Lord have mercy on us. Once there lived an old woman. She lived and loved until she got burnt up in her stove. Served her right too. The artist thereof, at least, was of that opinion. I could write some more, but the inkpot has suddenly gone and disappeared. And I'm going to round this section off with a couple of quotes from my man in Russia, Joseph Stalin.
Yeah.
And this is from his Problems of Leninism. Just a few sentences. It should not be forgotten that for the time being, the revolution has been victorious in only one country. Let's see if I can find a bit more here. Business accounting. Oh, I don't know what this is. So, I don't know. I can't find what I was looking for here. Maybe it's on the other page.
What are you reading from?
Oh, here you go. Oh. I've got it. Hence, this is at the end of New Task in Economic Construction. Hence, the task is to change your attitude towards the engineers and technicians of the old school. This is the ASEC input. To show them greater attention and solicitude. Display more boldness in enlisting their cooperation. And one more little bit, if I can find it. Bastard, I can't. That wasn't a swear word, that was just an admonition.
Mm.
I think I folded a page out. Oh, there we go. This is one that everyone's interested in.
Mm.
A working class industrial and technical intelligentsia. the USSR has its own industrial and technical intelligentsia. This is a position with regard to the fourth new condition of the development of our industry. And I can't find the patient, so I bet you're relieved. It was what he said about the kulaks and how they should be... I can't find that, so I won't read that.
All right.
Shall I try another bit of music or give up on that? Shall I just carry on?
I think... Yeah, I don't think the music's working because it's too far away.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. W.H. Auden. Now, well, I'm going to read this, and then I'm going to go on to one of George's poems. I'm not going to read the one which everyone reads, the Master of Arts, but I'm talking with the then poet laureate. I talked to him in America, John Ashbery. I've got one of his poems. And it was a point about symbolic logic, and I'll come on to it. I'll read a little bit of Embrace of Limestone, another famous one, but I just read one stanza from that. Here we go. If it forms the one landscape that we, the inconsistent ones, are consistently homesick for, this is chiefly because it dissolves in water. Mark these rounded slopes with their surface fragrance of thyme and beneath a secret system of caves and conduits. Here these springs spurt out everywhere with a chuckle, each filling a private pool for its fish and carving. Its own little ravine whose cliffs entertain the butterfly and the lizard. Examine this region of short distances and definite places. It could be more like mother, or a fitter background for her son, the flirtatious male who lounges against a rock in the sunlight, never doubting that for all his faults he is loved, whose works are extensions of his power to charm. From weathered outcrops to hilltop temple, from appearing waters to conspicuous fountains, from the wild to the formal vineyard, are ingenious but short steps that a child's wish to receive more attention than his brothers, whether by pleasing or teasing, can easily take. And I read Auden because he was influenced dominantly by Rilke. And this is back to George. Human types. Politics is what people do, typically, or say, so you, carrying your head high since you are ready to die. For what you know to be not true. Thinkers have an untypical face, shy, hunted, and fugitive, since they are ready to live by the brute facts of the case, and so feel themselves out of place. An idealist, say, what looks the case is in fact not. This gives them a sense of strain, cancelling out sin or pain. These types worry a lot. Poets and truly religious men, what do these look like then? Tired, muddled, perhaps kind, alive at the edge of the mind. Hard to know, hard to type, but one knows when. On to a sort of intermediary, Elizabeth Smart, just a little bit from Grand Central Station. I sat down and wept. Mm-hmm. Let me just see. I just read the last. I don't know. I've stuck these pages in to look at it. Mm. Let me see this other bit, and I can't know what. I don't know what the hell. Part one. Oh, this is okay. This is what old Bridget Brophy says about her. Is it Bridget Brophy? Yeah, Bridget Brophy. By Grand Central Station is one of the most shelled, skinned, nerve-exposed books ever written.
Mm.
It's a cry of complete vulnerability. Now, I've lost that page link. Let's see if I can find it again. Here we go. I just read from here. I don't know where it is. Right, okay.
Sure.
And what will the rose and the briar tell my sister's children playing near the grave? It's a prose poem. It picks my hand, the pretty flower, of a rose is all my song. But what did they kill each other for? How should I know, my little Wilhelmina? It is the language of love, which nobody understands. It's the first cry of never-to-be-born child. Go into your garden, for your apples are ripe. Unlike the genii at Hell's Gate, the darky porters arrive and usher in the day with brooms and enormous dustbins. Odours of disinfectant wipe out love and tears. With rush and thunder, the early workers overrun the world they have inherited, trampling out stains of the wailing, bleeding past. Good morning, boss. A cup of coffee and two fried eggs? Look at the idiot boy you begot with that night. He is all the world that is left. He is America, a better than love. He is civilization's heir. Oh, you mob whose actions brought him into being. He is happier than you, sweetheart. But it will do to fill these young coming thousand years. Well, what will he do? Well, it's too late to complain, my honey dove. Yes, it's just over. No regrets, no post-mortem. Just, you adjust yourself to the conditions as they are, that's all. You have to learn to be adaptable. I myself prefer Boulder Dam to Chartres Cathedral. I prefer dogs to children. I prefer corncobs to the genitals of males. Everything hotsy-totsy, dandy. Everything. Okay, it's in the bag. It can't miss. My dear, my darling, do you hear me where you sleep? Right. And this will bring us, because it's even more out there, this poem. This is the title poem by John Ashbery, as we know. This goes further, man. And I've got another one by him, because it's going to take you on that trip. All that we see is penetrated by it. The distant treetops with their steeples, so innocent, the stair, the windows fixed, flashing, pierced hole of fill of holes by the evil that is not evil, the romance that is not mysterious, the life that is not life, a present that is elsewhere. And further, in the small capitulations of the dance, you rub elbows with it, finger it. That day you did it was the day you had to stop, because the doing invaded the whole fabric. There was no other way to appear. You slid down on your knees for those precious jewels of spring water planted on the moss, before they got soaked up and you teetered on the edge of this calm street with its sidewalks, its traffic, as though they are coming to get you, but there was no one in the noon glare. Only birds like secrets to find out about, and a home to get to one of these days. The light that was shadowed then was seen to be our lives. Everything about us that love might wish to examine, then put away for a certain length of time until the whole is to be reviewed and we turn toward each other, to each other, the way we had come with all we could see, and it crept up on us, embarrassed. There is so much to tell now, really now. That's that one. And I talked to him, and he, it's this point about Auden. And essentially the point is, that you can't draw a conclusion from an existential affirmative. So, this fall of Icarus, with the man ploughing in the foreground and this little figure in the background, he draws a moral conclusion from it, and it's unfounded. And he had to agree with me. I got him repeated. I'll read one of his other ones. Just a, can you hear me, bird? And then I'll really get down to it. And for all the days it doesn't happen, something does happen. Solid and nutritional, like a wrapped steak tossed on the counter. At first I couldn't believe the first. Soon, so soon, it becomes average and airy, a fixture. Precept to be toyed with. The road started to get rough with me, a mere 800 feet away. The car wept on its blocks, and little Peter came and looked around and went away. It was kind of a mistake, and he went away. It was kind of a mistake. Breezes over dashboard, two violins solo, a fine seam, a paw slips over the face of the clock, laggards and dungeons in between. All I meant to suggest was a negative of what has been done, surges and slops against fifth floor windows in the time it takes to anchor a tricycle. And we, full of such courtesy, blind to the days, and it seems their systems at night, teetering on the board's edge. Sure, and the unrolled film fans out in the suns like a dolphin or a skate's wing. And after all who blubbered the truth, it wasn't I. Now, is this, what Maravich said, and this is why brings Calms in, the object doesn't exist. And because it doesn't exist, you can only infer it or suggest it, because when you state it, it ceases to exist. So all these poems are about edging around that. I'm going to read a couple of Robert Creeley.
Mm-hmm.
I saw him, and he had old, whatever his name was, that poet, the one of the London school, the American one, was sketching him. Anyhow, I love Wallace Stevens, but so this is a poem.
It was R.B. Kitaj.
Okay, Kitaj, yeah, that's the one. Yeah. So this is, it's like towards the supreme fiction. This is what I think of Wallace Stevens. So this is a little bit dense, but I've got another one that's a bit more open. Okay. After so many years, the familiar seems even more strange. The hand one was born with even more remote. The feet worn to discordant abilities. Face fainter. I loved you, Esmeralda, darling Bill. I liked the ambience of others, the clotted crowds. Inside it was empty. At best the fountain in winter, a sense of wasted drab park, a battered non-entity. Can I say the whole was my desire? May I again reiterate my single purpose? No one can know me better than myself, whose almost ancient proximity drew from the tedious. The joy was always to know it was the joy, to make all acquiescent to one's preeminent premise. A candle flickers in the quick shifting wind. It reads the weather wisely in the opened window. So it is the dullness of mind one cannot live without. This place returned to, this place that was never left. Now, and this is, I shouldn't read it with expression, because to be meat patrice, but, you know, echo. It was never simple to wait to sit quiet. Was there another way round at a distance to go? As if an echo hung in the air before one was heard, before a word had been said. What was love, and where, and how did one get there? I'm going on to another American poet who told this great poem that he only reads because he was 5,000 miles away when his wife isn't around. And roughly it was that this guy, a waiter in a restaurant, jumped on the table, pulled his John out, and got one of the knives and said, I'm going to end it all. And everyone on their deathbed, they go, do you know, that was one of the darndest things. So that was his thing. This is his poem. Prayer. Whatever happens, whatever is what... Oh, sorry. Leave it. Whatever happens, whatever what is... Okay, third time. Whatever happens, what is what I want. Only that, but that. I don't know if that's got it. Yeah. And I'm going to finish off with a bit of going even further into the American idiom, the style. I won't read the whole thing. But again, he dedicated this book to me. This is Thomas Lynch. Well met in the Ipswich track. With thanks for your rare focus of art. And he's a mortician. Grimalkin. I'll just read a bit of it. I might get through. I hadn't realised I was going through the street. Okay. I might read. Oh, let's see how it goes, man. Okay. One of these days she'll lie there and be dead. I'll take her out back in the garbage bag and bury her among my son's canaries, the all-fatal turkeys, pair of angelfish, the tragic and mannerly household pests that have had the better sense to take their leaves before their welcomes or my patience has won for warmth in. For 12 long years I've suffered this damned cat, while Mike, my darling middle son, himself 12 years, this coming May, has grown into the tender, if quick-tempered man-child his breeding blessed the curse him to become. And only his affection keeps this cat alive, though more than once I've threatened violence. The brick and burlap of the river recompense for mounds and fur balls littering the house, choking the vacuum cleaner. What's worse, shit in the closet, piss in the planters, mice that winter afternoon safely as she sleeps curled about a table ring, vigilant as any knick-knack in partial coma. But Mike, of course, is blind to all that. The grey Angora breed of arrogance, the sluttish roar, the way she disappears for days, sex desperate once or twice a year, urgently ripping her way out of the screen door to make her way with anything that moves, while Mike sits with the tuna fish of worry, crying into the darkness, "Here, kitty, kitty, mind lives of her whorish treacheries, of the crimes against upholstery, of the sofa's love seat, windbags, easy chairs, she's puked and mauled into dilapidation." I have the recurring dream of driving her deep into the desert east of town and dumping her out there with a few days' feed and water. In the dream, she's always found by kindly tribes people who eat her kind on certain holy days as a form of penance. God knows I know what he sees in her. Sometimes he holds her like a child in his arms, rubbing her underside until she sounds like one of those battery-powered vibrators folks claim to use in the H lake of their shoulders. And under Mike's protection, she will fix her into the green eye gaze on me as if to say, "What are you going to do about it, Slick? The child loves me, and I love the child." Truth told, I really ought to have her fixed in the old way with an airtight alibi, a bag of ready mix, and no eyewitnesses. But one of these days, she will lie there and be dead, and choking back loud hallelujahs, I'll pretend a brief bereavement for my Michael's sake, letting him think, as he often says, deep down inside, you really love her, don't you, Dad? I'll even hold some cheerful secrets, careful to observe God's never-failing care for even these, at like the least of his creatures, making some mention of cat heaven, where cat ashes to ashes, cat dust to dust, and the Lord gives and the Lord has taken away. I'll turn Mike homeward from that wicked little babe, and if he asks, we'll get another one, because all boys need practice in the arts of love, and all aging fathers in the arts of rage. On to English. And she's been my guiding light, really, at the Arvon Poetry courses, Carol Satyamurti. There's three of them that I know, and they're all good friends. And this is changing the subject. She wrote this wonderful poem that if she found she'd have incurable cancer, the first thing she'd do would be to murder Margaret Thatcher. Anyhow, this is on reflecting, changing operations and all that kind of stuff. Okay, this is part one, the word. It started with my grandfather, who, fading unspeakably, lay in the blue room, disappeared, leaving a cardboard box, coils of chalky brown rubber tube. I inherited her room, her key. The walls were papered bright, but the unsayable word seeped through. Some nights I heard it in the dripping of the tap. I saw it in my parents' mouths, how it twisted lips for whispers before they changed the subject. I saw it through fingers, screening me from news. The word had rooted in my head, casting blue shadows. It has put on flesh, spawned strong and crazy children who wake, reach out their claws. Gregory Warren Wilson, who accompanied Carol in a lot of the courses, and he's really been a good friend and a signpost and shown me through a lot of really tricky times. He's an accomplished violinist, and he started out as a male dancer, and now he's an eminent poet. And I don't know what his next one thing. Anyway, this is the sculpture garden's closure. Space enclosed between those leaves has changed, has been defined by sculptures that are no longer here. Trees that seem to have little to do with the lost wax process now stand in relation to more than one another. Something still remains as if visible to the ear, audible to the skin. Here not only vacancy has been disclosed, a tangible mirage of air has replaced bronze and lichen-coloured patinas, making apprehensible the specific gravity of silence and the fluent volume of space I occupied, but now has left forever closing behind me. And this is one from Bernard O'Donoghue, who said to me this on parting. He said, "I'm like a drowning man in a river, throwing to you a lifeline, who's also drowning in the river." Yeah. The weakness. It was the frosty early hours when finally the cow's despairing groans rolled him from bed and into his boots, hardly yet awake yet. He called, "Dan, come on, Dan, she's carving," and stumbled without his coat down the icy path to the haggard. Castor and Pollux were fixed in line over his head, but he didn't see them. This night, any more than at another, he crossed to the stall past the corner of the fairy fort he'd levelled last May, but this that stopped him, like the mind's step backwards, was what that, more insistent than the calf's birth pangs. Hold on, Dan. I think I'm having a weakness. I never had a weakness, Dan, before. And down he slid, groping for the lapels of the shocked boy's 20-year-old jacket. And the last in this little bit, before I go on to the Belgian, German and French symbolists, going back a little bit, is a poem of thinking of happiness, a timely poem by Michael Lasky. And it concerns, South America have half of private patients have cesarean sections and operations directly rated to the woman's income and inversely rated to her degree of risk. It's 5 PM, exactly 5 o'clock. The cathedral carillon chiming as the doctor d'Hamon et Chevalier enters the gleaming theatre in the Queen of Heaven clinic, putting an end to ease. The anaesthetist tightens the final nozzle. Masked nurses and junior doctors back off, open a path to the table where La Señora Carrera Velarde is breathing oxygen and expecting her first baby by cesarean section this afternoon. You can tell by her perfectly manicured nails, by the gloss of her skin, her soft hair, that she'll never know labour. Though all her babies, fat junks lined up, would tip themselves naturally into the cup of the cervix without his expertise. So I don't want to see it. I don't want to watch the incision the doctor is making, his sharp practice, his dark red Mercedes reversing in the hospital car park.
Who's that by?
Michael Lasky.
Okay.
Okay, do you want me to go straight on? I've got a poem by Paul Cézanne.
Yeah, sure.
I'll throw it in. It's a bit out of context, but that will lead us, and I think it's a good bridge, for symbolist poets, because that's where I'm coming from, symbolism. And it might give you a guide. Now, let's see if I can find it. What do I do with it? I've got his selected writing here. And I can't find. I didn't put anything in the page. I just find anything. He writes to Zola all the time. It's quite a good contrast to his painting, actually.
Mm.
Right, here we go. This is one, but anyhow. I don't know, I just picked it. I tremble when I see all the geography, history, and this is translation, of course, Latin, Greek, geometry, conspiring against me. I see them threatening those examiners who piercing gauge brings deep distress to the bottom of my heart. Every moment my fear grows more intense, and I say to myself, Lord, disperse these foes, brazenly joined in my certain downfall, confound the foul brand. It's true that the prayers is not so charitable, yet forgive me, Lord, by grace. I am devoted servant of your altar, at your altar. I honour your images with daily incense. Our Lord, bring down those wicked characters. Look at them already preparing to gather, rubbing their hands, ready to fail us all. Lord, look at them, Lord, with cruel delight, targeting their prey. Look, Lord, how carefully they pull their deadly numbers in their offices. No, do not suffer me to fall, an innocent victim under the blows of their increasing wrath. Send me your sanctifying Holy Spirit, and soon shed over your servant the dazzling light of its profound knowledge. And if you forgive me, in my final hour, you will still hear me bellowing prayers, which will leave you, all you saints, crestfallen. Hear me, Lord, hear my prayer. Be so good, Lord, also not to dally in the bestowing of the aforesaid favours. And may my avowals ascend to your celestial eden. So it's pretty religious, old man. Which will take us right into the final climax of four symbolist poets, starting with Holdering. Let's see if I can find it. These are all in translation, so, you know, I don't know, better than nothing. Hyperion's Song of Fate. You walk above in the light, weightless tread, a soft floor, blessed genii, radiant the gods. Mild breezes gently play on you as the girl's artist fingers on holy strings. Fearless the heavenly breeze, like an unweaned infant asleep, chastely preserved in modest bud, forever their minds are in flower and their blissful eyes eternally tranquil gaze, eternally clear. But we are fated to find no foothold, no rest, and suffering mortals dwindle and fall headlong from 1 hour to the next, hurled like water from ledge to ledge, downward for years to their vague abyss. This is what I like about Symbolist, but it doesn't hold back. Okay, this is one by, I can't pronounce his name. This is Emil der Herren. It's a show on at the RAA. It was his friend. Older guy. Anyhow, he's another Symbolist painter.
No, Enso. Is it Enso?
Pardon?
Enso.
No, it's Spillet.
Oh, yes.
A-E-R-T.
Right.
Okay, the crown. Yes, I too would like my crowns of thorns, and one for each thought, red hot across my brow, right into my brain, to the frail roots where sins are forged dreams rise within me, through me. I crave it like a fury, like an ebony bush in flame, like manes of lightning and flames combed with a strange wind. And these would be my vain and mystic cravings, my science of boredom, my beaten affections of flagrant remorse, my shimmering desires of murder and madness, my stubborn hates that with sting and claw it would bite, and more intimate still, my old deaths rattle towards bellies, muffled in heavy, fierce fleeces of gold, my flawed fingers and claustral lips, my last jolting of nerves and sob and deeper, even the carnal rot of my torment, until finally, crown of my agony and of my joy, crown of tyranny, seated upon above two eyes, my mouth and brain, dream crown on my sleep walker's brow, madly transfix me then with your absurdity, and crown me with your farcical, long-suffering king. Right, on to, going slightly across land, back to Germany. This is To Be Silenced by Georg Trakl. Oh, the insanity of the great city, where at nightfall, against the black walls, the stunted trees stiffen, the spirit of evil peers from a silver mask. Light with magnetic scourge drives out the stony night. Oh, sunken tolling of evening bell, that's light. Where, who bears a dead child in icy convulsions? Oh, sorry. Whore, who bears a dead child in icy convulsions? God's wrath and screaming whips over the brows of those possessed. Purple plague, hunger that ruptures green eyes. Oh, the gruesome laughter of gold. But in the dark caves of mankind, more silently bleeds from hard metals, forms the redeeming head. And finally, Pulse of Solan. That's bringing a bit of symbolism up to date in France. Psalm. No one molds us again out of earth and clay. No one conjures our dust. No one. Praised by your name, no one. For your sake, we shall flower towards you. And nothing we were, are, shall remain flowering. The nothing, the no one's rose, with our pistol soul bright, with our stamen heaven rage ravaged, our corolla red, with the crimson word which we sang over.
I think it's cut out and I can't see where it. Does it stop? Is it still running? Yep. Hello, Bob. Hello.
Hello. Coming from the kitchen.
Yeah, no, sorry. I had to quickly check the... I thought the recorder had stopped, but it hasn't. It's kept going. It's fine. Okay. Well, what's happening with your group, with your psycho... whatever?
Okay, I'll tell you all the other news now. Whoops, hang on, let's just push that light on. Right, movie news. What's happened with the project? It's on hold, obviously, because I haven't, I was building up to this. I've been trying to create this no name, here we go again, no name now character over the last year.
Yeah.
Through process paintings. Paintings that are to be used online. So they're not about the paintings per se, they're about the image, their image, and then what's done with them.
Yeah.
So they're not, you know, I've been doing non-paintings for years now.
Yeah.
Initially they were performance art, representing my performance art, so they weren't paintings as such in that sense either then. So I've been doing painting which isn't painting.
But is your, are you in touch with the group? Are you doing one of these Zoom meetings or something, or are you kind of, you know?
I don't know. Well, I send out, you get it as well.
Yeah.
Whenever I send out the things, everyone gets it.
Right.
I get hardly any feedback the whole time.
No.
But I think they don't respond because they haven't got anything to say. They're waiting for the next one. I think they're so baffled by each one that's enough to, to carry them through to the next. So I think they're all captive audience, if you see what I mean.
Yes.
So I think, I've got another one planned, I don't know if you call it intervention. Yeah. What I've done now, in the meantime, I've returned to painting.
Yeah.
You know, I'm calling it painting. And this is in service to the project now, I mean, to the movie. What's happened to the, as I said in our last program, where I had the director and one of the inspirational poets along in the studio. I've had one of these. I've paused and I've forgotten what I'm talking about. I've had these senior moments. Do you remember what I was talking about, William?
Well, I was asking you about the film and the ongoing project.
Okay, the film, okay. So here's the film coming along, and I'm doing these. What's his name? James Brett, Gallery of Everything founder. He's taken over the role of Ken, who's died. He was my tutor. And, I don't know, he wasn't... Anyhow, not like Mum, who's communicated to me in her death, you see. I have to find a new one, and I guess he'll do. And what I've been doing, he said, slow down, change gears, be more reflective. I don't know how much aware he is that I've been doing process painting. Yeah, I've taken his advice because it was the right time. I said, sure, I'll do it. Okay. And I've gone into a different phase. I'm doing it, and it's slowing down considerably. And what I'm getting onto now is I'm working on the same image. I did A1 watercolour paper for 3 weeks, and that was in encaustic, and it was I'm stretching it beyond what I could do with the encaustic, because here I am in the kitchen in the on the table there, on the drain boards and the heated pallet and oh god knows what, and you know, falling over the washing up and trying to keep it clean, and you know, you can imagine anyhow.
Yeah.
So I could only keep it up for so long, and then it got increasingly demanding because you put on another coat and it wipes away the underneath, and you're gradually trying to build stuff up, and then you're like, and then, oh, I don't know. Anyhow, I took it as far as I can. It's pretty good. And now I'm taking that image. Now, the image is the title of the film, Mass Psychosis.
Yeah.
And what I'm now doing is, I don't want to go into details here because I don't know. There's a thing about, like, the, that director, Pablo, he's good. He knows his stuff, man. He's the man. And his point is, and he said I could talk about the film, but I won't go into details. We've got Adam, who he's been on the program in the past. You know Adam.
Yeah.
He's, you know, he goes into flights of imagination, and we have to peg him down, you know, to stop, you know, Right. We're not interested in that right now. Later, that comes later. So, cool it, Adam. So, we see this as a smash hit movie, not an art house movie that will be 10 years in the vault and probably never get out and off the page, that sort of thing. We want to do something that's... Pablo knows how to do it. He got his funding, it was a can, and he got the funding for Adrift in Soho, just by sort of a miracle, really. But anyhow, what we do is first draft, then the contacts. I can tell you, my contacts are, what the heck, Jonty Claypole, who's the head of art at BBC, he's a big fan, so to speak. Yeah. And I was in a movie. That wasn't a movie actually. I got through being at the Institute. I got a referral to Fred Roos, who just produced The Godfather, Apocalypse Now, in his Verbeck Studios. And anyhow, he might remember me visiting him, and that sort of thing. I mean, something of a fresh, although it was sort of 40 years, 50 years ago. And he's still around, because I saw his credit with that one about the Catholic girls' school and that hysteria, you know, the falling or something like that, I think it's called. And so he's in that same area. And that was the family of the guy, the English director, who made The Man Who Came to Earth, Fell to Earth, which is, he's
Nicholas Rowe.
Pablo sees this as my movie as sort of what are they called? What was that big film in the 60s with Dennis Hopper and everybody?
Oh, Easy Rider.
Easy Rider meets Apocalypse Now. That's the I don't know. So that's make it pop. Go for a bit. So that's what. So he's into it. And we're just keeping him on task, get the first draft and then send out, because we need to raise £500,000 and, we have to identify sources. We're not going anywhere until we get that funding secured.
Right. Okay.
And we take it safe, because it's stupid, you're in South Cuckoo Land otherwise. And then we build up the whole thing and so on. And
all right.
Locations.
Bob, I'm going to wind...
So that's going on.
Hello. I'm going to wind it up now, Bob. Yeah, I think I think that's fantastic. Thank you very much for talking.
Okay.
I think that's probably. I'll call you back later. But I think that's enough material for today.
Okay, it went okay.
Yeah, it's fantastic. It's great, Bob. Yeah, the poetry readings are fantastic. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay.
All right. I'll speak to you soon. I'll sort of finish this now, because this is an hour-long block,
gotcha.
Which is enough material.
And you can shove some music in.
Exactly. I'll play some Charlie Parker or something.
Put that Charlie Parker on. Go for the one that... It's Live from Storyville, that one.
Okay.
I've got David S. Ware, and other ones all lined up, but don't worry about that. And the Tusker G Experiment with that clarinet player and so on. But pick. Okay.
I'll let you know. It might not be this week. It might be next week. It depends on whether whether it gets into shape or not. I'll let you know.
And it's not over distorted.
It's kind of obviously it's not perfect
by any
means.
It's a field. Recording.
It's the sound off a phone, which is.
It's intelligible. You could probably make out what I'm saying.
I quite like the relentless poetry, the kind of, going sort of on and on. It becomes sort of like something else in a way. It becomes
a mantra. No, exactly. That's the trajectory of what American Poet was all about. Monotone.
Yeah.
Absolutely nothing about your mouth opening and making sound. That's what I think it's about. And I love that, because it's that whole New York move. Okay, then.
All right. Thanks a lot, Bob. All right. Speak soon. Thank you. Bye. Bye.
This program has been brought to you by Resonance 104.4 FM. If you liked what you heard and want to support our work, please make a donation at fundraiser.resonance.fm.